don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. Welcome back, everybody, to another Cryptoconomy Quick Read. Today we hit the third and final part of the Understanding the Lightning Network series written by Aaron Von Wertheim, and you can find that at bitcoinmagazine.com. And part three is titled Completing the Puzzle and Closing the Channel. And I'll go into more details and try to sum up what we've got so far at the end of the episode. But for now, we'll go ahead and jump into Understanding the Lightning Network, Part 3. The Lightning Network is probably the most highly anticipated technological innovation that will be deployed on top of Bitcoin. The payment layer, first proposed by Joseph Poon and Taj Dryja about a year ago, promises to support a virtually unlimited number of off-chain transactions among users at nearly no cost, while leveraging the security offered by Bitcoin. At least three companies, Poon and Dryja's Lightning, Blockstream, and Blockchain, are currently working on implementations of the technology. But few outside this small technological front line fully grasp how the future of micropayments is set to boost Bitcoin's capabilities. In this three-part series, Bitcoin Magazine lays out the basic building blocks of the Lightning Network and shows how they fit together to realize this upcoming protocol layer. The first part of this series covered basic building blocks and explained how these are used to establish bidirectional payment channels. The second part explained how a network is formed and how hash time lock contracts, HTLCs, link different channels in the network together. This third and final part of the series explains how HTLCs are placed inside bidirectional payment channels to ensure transactions can occur fully off-chain. The Lightning Network. So far, Alice and Bob opened a bidirectional payment channel, which they both funded with 5 bitcoins. They've made 2 transactions back and forth, and at the current channel state, both Alice and Bob can claim 5 bitcoins for themselves by, quote, dropping the channel on the blockchain. Now, they want to include an HTLC in the channel. This is to ensure that if Carol claims a Bitcoin from Bob in return for her secret value, Bob is guaranteed a Bitcoin from Alice in return. Like the previous step, Alice and Bob start by creating a new commitment transaction each. In many ways, these commitment transactions are very similar to previous commitment transactions. They include a normal output and an output to a funky multi-sig address with a CSV, a check sequence verify, time lock, and a special hash lock. Likewise, as in the previous step, Alice and Bob exchange their old secrets to effectively invalidate the old channel. And once exchanged, both Alice and Bob can sign their halves of the commitment transactions and potentially drop them on the blockchain at any time. All familiar territory, except for one change. Both Alice's and Bob's commitment transactions now include one new output worth 1 Bitcoin. This makes the balance 4-5-1. 4 for Alice, 5 for Bob, 1 for the new output. This new output is essentially the HTLC, and it's even funkier than all the other outputs so far, because there are 3 ways to unlock it. First, the new output, in both Alice's and Bob's commitment transactions, releases the Bitcoin on condition that Bob's signature and the secret number is included in the subsequent transaction. As such, regardless of whether Alice or Bob signs and broadcasts the commitment transaction, only Bob can unlock this output if he includes the secret number. But there's one small difference between the two commitment transactions. If Bob drops the channel, there is a CSV time lock involved, or check sequence verify. He will need to wait 1,000 blocks. If Alice drops the channel, he can claim this Bitcoin immediately. The reason Bob has to wait 1,000 blocks if he drops the channel is very similar to what we've seen before. It allows Alice to take this Bitcoin in case Bob ever tries to sign and broadcast an old channel state. That's where the second way to unlock the output comes in. Alice can, quote, steal the funds if she provides Bob's newest secret. Two can play this game. If Alice ever tries to cheat and broadcast this channel when it's already outdated, Bob can claim this Bitcoin using Alice's secret. He wouldn't even need to provide the value. And third, as with any other HTLC, both commitment transactions also include the usual CLTV timeout fallback for Alice. If Bob does not include the secret number in, say, 2 weeks, for instance, because he didn't get it from Carol, Alice can claim her Bitcoin back. Again, whether Alice or Bob drops the channel doesn't matter for this option. So where did all this get us? Both Alice and Bob hold a half-valid commitment transaction. If Alice drops her commitment transaction on the blockchain, she immediately sends 5 bitcoins to Bob. Additionally, she can wait 1,000 blocks and claim 4 bitcoins for herself. Plus, Bob has 2 weeks to provide the value and claim the Bitcoin in the HTLC output. If he doesn't provide the value in 2 weeks, Alice can claim this Bitcoin back. Bob, meanwhile, can drop his commitment transaction at any time as well and immediately send 4 Bitcoins to Alice. Then he'd have to wait 1,000 blocks to claim 5 more Bitcoins from one address and another Bitcoin from the HTLC output, if he provides the secret number. If he doesn't provide the secret number in 2 weeks, Alice can reclaim it. And of course, if either Alice or Bob tries to cheat at any point in the future and sign and broadcast this channel when it's outdated, both can completely block the other and steal all Bitcoins in the channel. Settling the status. At this point, Bob is guaranteed to receive a Bitcoin in exchange for the secret number, assuming he has it. All he has to do is sign and broadcast the commitment transaction that he got from Alice, include the secret value in a subsequent transaction, and sign and broadcast that as well. Alice knows this. There's no way she can cheat Bob out of his Bitcoin, not even if she found out what the secret value is through some other means. As such, the two might as well just settle outside of the channel. Bob can simply give the value to Alice, and Alice can agree to update the channel status to the more normal state without the HTLC and the timeout deadline. Assuming both parties want to keep the channel open, that's what they would naturally do. It's less of a hassle than having to drop the channel on the blockchain. Closing the channel. And finally, here's the real power of the Lightning Network. Almost everything described in these three articles will typically never need to hit the Bitcoin blockchain at all. If both Alice and Bob want to close the channel peacefully, they can simply create a transaction from the original opening transaction to override everything that happened since the opening transaction. From this closing transaction, they send themselves their fair share of the channel as represented by the most recent channel state. Concretely, this means that if Alice wants to close the channel, she can at this point simply create a transaction paying herself 4 bitcoins and Bob 6 and ask Bob to sign and broadcast that transaction. Since there is no reason for him not to, he will probably cooperate and close the channel. In the end, only 2 transactions will have been broadcast over the Bitcoin network and included in a block: the opening and the closing transactions. That will hold true even if Alice and Bob transact 1,000,000 times in between, therefore unloading a huge burden away from the blockchain. All right, and that was it. We have finished part three of BitcoinMagazine.com and Aaron Von Wertheim's Understanding the Lightning Network. For the summary today, I don't want to go quite so specific as I did yesterday. And I know not everybody out there is like object-oriented when they think about things, but it really helps me to draw a picture in my mind. So with that, I want to try and paint a picture for you of what the commitment transaction looks like. And if you want to look at kind of the diagrams and the breakdowns, all these articles, particularly the third one, has a really good layout. They have visual graphics that show a technical breakdown of everything that's going on in the transaction. And I definitely encourage you to go look at it if you really want to wrap your head around all the little pieces and locks and everything that's going on. So be sure to check that out. Of course, I'll link to everything in the post. But again, I'm going to try to explain everything that goes into a commitment transaction. And this is after we have routed one Bitcoin to Carol. And we're going to use this as a relationship between you and me. We have a channel, and then you have a channel with Carol. I'm Alice, your Bob. You can call me Mrs. Alice. So, what does that transaction look like, and what happens if somebody broadcasts it? So, as always, when we're making a new commitment transaction or updating a state, we both make new secret numbers and hash them. So this is like our secret key and then the corresponding lock. I give you my lock, keeping my key, and you give me your lock, also keeping your key. So now we have the pieces we needed to go ahead and start writing our commitment. Imagine the transaction like a tree, just so we can simplify the terminology a little. At the trunk of this tree is an address with 10 Bitcoin in it. It can only be unlocked by both of us at the same time. Now the tree, or transaction, has three branches. The first branch is the most straightforward, and it only has a single leaf on it. A leaf here is going to refer to just executed outcomes. This single leaf says that you get your 5 Bitcoin, and you signed it. You gave me this transaction, you orchestrated it, and you said, I get my 5 Bitcoin, and you signed it so that it's ready to go. If I broadcast this to the network, you get those 5 Bitcoin immediately. They're yours. That's the first branch. Second branch gets a little trickier. This branch has two leaves on it. The first leaf says, I get my 4 Bitcoin back, but I have to wait 1,000 blocks. You also already signed it. You don't mind making me wait 1,000 blocks. So, 4 Bitcoin back to me, the ones that I own, and I have to wait 1,000 blocks. The second leaf on that branch, however, sends my 4 Bitcoin to you, and you signed it, but it's also got my lock on it. So unless I give you my secret key, this leaf doesn't do anything. This one is just the insurance policy. And that's everything on the second branch. The third branch now holds the one Bitcoin left over, the one that's being routed to you and then to Carol. So this third branch has three leaves on it. First leaf is the simplest, and it's the one that we want to unfold. Because it's the one where everything happens nicely. If you can provide Carol's secret key when we started to route the payment, that's what we had to get, is Carol's lock. So if you can provide her secret key, you get that one Bitcoin. That's all the first leaf. The second leaf also sends the Bitcoin to you, but it has my lock on it. So one leaf gets you the Bitcoin with Carol's lock, or with Carol's key, and another leaf gets you the Bitcoin with my secret key. Now the reason there's also a transaction where you get that one Bitcoin and you don't even need Carol's secret key is so that we can still outdate the transaction the same as we did the other. Meaning that if we've already updated this later on and I gave you the secret key for this entire transaction in all the branches, then you don't need to go grab Carol's secret key or anything. All you need is mine, and you still get your, or excuse me, you still get my full 5 Bitcoin because I tried to cheat. So that's why that's there. So there's a leaf where you need Carol's secret key to get the Bitcoin, and then there's one where you need my secret key to get the Bitcoin. And then there is the last leaf, and that sends the one Bitcoin back to me, and that's only after the 2 weeks have passed or some predetermined amount of time, in this case 2 weeks, and you haven't claimed it any other way. So those are all three of the leaves on our new branch. And then the commitment that you are holding is almost identical, except it's the opposite. However, there is actually one minor difference, which we've just learned in part three of this series, is that third branch that has the three different leaves on it. The first one was, as we just went over, one Bitcoin goes to you with Carol's secret key. The second said you get it with my secret key. And the third said I get it if nothing happens. It's a little different on yours. Because it was originally my Bitcoin, if you broadcast it as an old state, like if we've updated this commitment way down the road and you try to broadcast it, I need to still have some sort of a guarantee that you can't get that one Bitcoin immediately, because I need to have time to contest that. So whereas with Carol's secret key from my transaction that I'm holding, you get the Bitcoin immediately. With Carol's secret key on your commitment transaction, you have to wait 1,000 blocks to make sure that I don't have your secret key, which is on that second leaf, and I can take it back. All right, so that's the whole transaction as it's after we've routed the payment, or I guess while we're trying to route the payment. Afterward, we can both just update our commitment transactions to reflect the new balance and drop all the stuff with Carol's key. However, one thing to note is my key, the hash time lock contract between you and Carol, doesn't look quite exactly like ours, because y'all don't need my lock at all. You guys just need Carol's lock. And the reason is because if she tries to broadcast to take that one Bitcoin from you, whether or not you've gotten it from me, to do so, she has to broadcast that secret key as part of the transaction. So it's just open and exposed like a transaction signature on the blockchain. So if she tries to broadcast at the state where she gets that one Bitcoin, she is forced to expose the information, the secret key that unlocks it from my hash time lock contract, that that first leaf on the third branch that gives you the Bitcoin. And that's why, if you remember in part two at the end, he said that the time lock has to be shorter between you and Carol than it is between me and you. The reason is because if Carol is not forced to publish this information before my time lock runs out, I'm able to get it back. I'm able to get my Bitcoin back from you, even though Carol got your Bitcoin. So there has to be a window of time, just like all these 1,000 block wait times, where you can be certain that you have a window to take the Bitcoin from me, since you have forwarded it already to Carol. So we did it. That's the whole process, multiple times, explained a couple of different ways. I hope that you got a good chunk of that. Feel free to listen to it a couple of times to let it sink in. And again, I definitely encourage you to go to BitcoinMagazine.com and look at the graphics, because they do a good job of letting you see all the pieces, and they color code everything and whose signature's where and whose lock is where and all that great stuff. So it's definitely a good reference to have, particularly when you're trying to think about something. But with this, now that we have finished part 1, 2, and 3 of Aaron Von Wertheim's explanatory series, we are going to use all of this information that we have now learned, and I'm going to go through all of the FUD, basically the bulk of the common claims about Lightning Network, that it's fractional reserve or that it's going to be centralized and all that good stuff. And we will explore what merit, if any, that these claims have. If you would like to hear that, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast or follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy or Medium. Another thank you to Aaron Von Wertheim for this series. It's absolutely great. He's an excellent journalist. He's one of the few very reliable and incredibly intelligent or knowledgeable journalists in the Bitcoin space. It's great to have a resource that you know you can trust. So thank you, Aaron Von Wertheim, for this, and a big thumbs up to Bitcoin Magazine as well. But again, don't forget to subscribe, like, follow, all that great stuff. I hope you have enjoyed part 3 of Understanding the Lightning Network. I'll catch you guys later, but until then, take it easy.